Good to see everybody here this evening. I know you could be watching the Super Bowl if you wanted to be, and yet here you are at worship, and it's good to have you here. Good to have our visitors here as well. We've got some family back with us tonight, and it's good to see y'all here. Good to see some of y'all also that have been fighting the different ailments that we've had. This has been probably the most challenging year I can remember since I've been here as far as the number of sick. I've told people whenever I do the bulletin now, it's like triage. I can only put the ones in that either are in the hospital or just getting out of the hospital or about to have surgery. And so it's been a trying year for a lot of folks. And again, it's good to see each one of you who can be here this evening. I want to talk about something that I think is a critical part of what we do, and I think it's really important for us to understand. And I just want to kind of use an example from everyday life. When I coach little kids, I mentioned this in Bible class this morning. I always try and make whatever we're doing, whether basketball or baseball or whatever it is, I always try and make it as simple as possible for them to understand, as far as the rules and what we want to accomplish and all that, and just put it as basic as possible. And so that part is really simple, and that part's really basic. But when it comes to those who want to be excellent at what they do, then there has to be an effort that is as difficult as possible. I can remember when Charisse decided she wanted to play point guard in basketball, and I can remember asking her, "Are you really wanting to do that? Are you willing to put the time into it and the effort into it?" And she was, and so I can remember designing a workout for her that was just next to impossible. It was really frustrating to her for a while, but she really had a passion for that, and she wanted to excel at it. And so she would go out, not at my bidding, but just on her own during the summertime, and go work out just as hard as she could, and just working at this particular skill that she wanted to acquire. When it comes to Christianity, God has made what we need to know as simple as possible and as basic as possible. There is nothing that he has hidden at all. He wants us to do well. But then from our perspective, he wants us to give everything that we have. He wants us to work as hard as we possibly can in his service. And so it's, again, that very basic thing that we can see, whether we're talking about athletics, whether we're talking about our jobs, whether we're talking about school, or anything that we want to do in life or accomplish in life. It is very important to look at it from the outside and try and make it as simple and basic as possible, but then to work as hard as possible to do that. And so this is what we want to look at tonight. And I want to start with a passage in 1 Corinthians chapter 10 and verse 33. Apostle Paul is talking, and he says this: "So whether you eat or drink or whatever you do, do it all for the glory of God. Do not cause anyone to stumble, whether Jews or Greek, or the church of God, even as I try to please everybody in every way. For I'm not seeking my own good, but the good of many, so that they may be saved." This tells us why we're doing everything to the best of our ability, and the fact that now we need to add this perspective: we need to do it all for God's glory, what we're doing. We can't be doing things to try and build ourselves up. We can't be trying to be doing it so that people will glorify and honor us. As a matter of fact, in the same sermon, Jesus told people to let their light shine so that they could glorify God. But he also warned them, if you're doing your deeds before men to be seen by men, that's the only reward you're going to get. And the point that Jesus was making was very clear. If you're doing things for you to be glorified, you're not serving God in the right way. But at the same time, we need to be serving God so that people will see what we're doing so that he can be glorified. And so this is the direction we're doing. Whether you eat or drink, do it all to the glory of God. This next passage, found in Colossians chapter 3, verse 17, is along the same lines. It says, whatever you do, whether in word or deed, do it all in the name of the Lord Jesus, giving thanks to God the Father through him. I don't know what you like to do, but I've mentioned before, from the time I was really little, I can remember that having fun was probably the most important thing for me every day. And so when I woke up, I was going to have fun. And it didn't mean that I didn't work. I had fun collecting pop bottles. Back when I was a little kid, you could go and pick up a piece of glass that somebody had thrown away and take it to the grocery store, and they would give you money with which you could exchange for candy. And so one of my funnest things when I was a kid was going out and doing what some people would think was work. But for me, it was like, I'm going to go take this and I'm going to go get me some candy, because that's fun. I can remember slinging my baseball mitt over the handlebars of my bike and going around and riding around and getting as many people as I possibly could together so that we could play baseball or whatever it was. I think that God is pleased with us when we enjoy the life that he's given to us. But we have to remember that we're trying to live our life by doing it all in the name of the Lord. And especially as we grow up, especially as we start to mature, we start to realize that I'm here for a purpose. I'm here to try and help as many people as I can. That's why in 1 Corinthians, the passage we just read, that we're not seeking our own good, but the good of many so that they may be saved. This is why we're working so hard, is because it's not just us. We're trying to help as many others on that road, and hopefully they're helping us as best they can on that road so we can be with God in heaven someday. But again, this idea of all the effort we can have is absolutely vital. I don't remember what book I got this from, but I do know where who made the quote. It's a man by the name of Harry Overstreet, and he said this: action springs out of what we fundamentally desire. Think about that for a moment. Action springs out of what you fundamentally desire. And so he said, the best piece of advice which can be given to would-be persuaders, he's talking to a group of salesmen, the best piece of advice which can be given to would-be persuaders is this: first arouse in the other person an eager want. That's really important when we're trying to sell something to somebody. And hopefully we're trying to sell something to somebody not for selfish purposes, but because we want their best for them. When again, going back to coaching, try to get the kids to buy into the idea of you can win a championship if you work really hard at it. And it's going to be fun along the way. But you try and show them this is what the trophy looks like, and this is what you're going after, and they see that with an eager want. When you're talking to salesmen, they certainly want to get a good commission, and yet at the same time, those who are the most effective salesmen are the ones who believe in their product, and so they're the ones who are able to go to the clients and tell them, look, this is what this will do for you. This is how much money this will save you. This is how much time this will save you, and so you're bringing something to somebody that has value to them. And you're at the same time creating an eager want within them to where the product will sell itself because people say, I want one of those. I've talked about this a lot in our family. When we started this 30-day Bible challenge, Carolyn came up and designed a little bookmark that costs a penny and a half. Now, with expenses like they are, it's just skyrocketed to 2 cents bookmark right now. But it's really attractive, and it's been amazing how many people have seen it and said, "Ooh, I want one of those." You know, here's something that costs 2 cents. Can you think of anything that costs 2 cents that somebody says, "Ooh, I want one of those"? But if you can, the idea behind that was to give somebody something that would encourage them to read the Bible on a regular basis. But if you just go up to them and say, "Hey, you need to be reading your Bible on a regular basis," that might not mean anything to them. But if you start off by saying, you know, we're trying. God has promised us heaven if we do certain things. And his word contains the instructions for that. And that creates an eager want. So when we present the gospel to people, we can either do it with a red face and pointing our finger at people and making it really unattractive, or we can be trying to make Christianity, trying to let people see that Christianity is beautiful. I don't know how many funerals I have done through the years, and by the way, I don't like doing funerals because for obvious reasons. But I don't know how many times somebody has come up after a funeral and has said, "Boy, that was just really good." Doesn't that sound strange that a funeral could be really good? But I knew what they meant because the life of the person who we were thinking about on that particular day was so attractive that it was something that actually attracted people to Christ because of that. I've seen instances. Matter of fact, I know of one instance in particular where a man became a Christian later on, and he revealed the reason for that was because of a man whose funeral he went to, who he really admired, who he saw what kind of a life he led, and he wanted that. And so he followed Christ because just hearing about this man's life, whom he admired. You see, the idea behind our lives is we want to try and attract people to Christ with our lives, because that's what we're here for. We're here to go to heaven. If we ever forget that, if we ever put anything else in between our being here and going to heaven, not because we deserve it, because God desires that for us and we do too. If we ever forget that, then we're not going to do well in life. But if we remember that, then our life can be a lot of fun. It can be a tremendous joy. And when people see that, they want that. And you can create within people an eager desire to have that, because people who don't have Christ have a void in their life that is palpable. They can feel it. They know that there's something that's not right in their life, and they want to change that. And when they can see people who have Christ in their life, they start making some changes. It's really a fascinating thing when you think about it. Colossians chapter 3, verse 22 says this: "Whatever you do, work at it with all your heart." Sometimes people don't like that word "work." I hope you like that word "work." I can't remember who it was. It may have been Andrew Carnegie, but he talked about opportunity, and he said a lot of people don't recognize opportunity because it shows up in dress clothes or it shows up in work clothes, and a lot of people don't like that idea of work. I think most of y'all do like work. This says, whatever you do, work at it with all your heart. Throw all of your effort into it. And especially when we talk about serving God, as working for the Lord, not for men. That really caused me a lot of extra effort when I was a real estate appraiser, because I would have a piece of information that I needed to add to that appraisal that I found out as I was reviewing it and ready to turn it in, ready to be done with it, and I would think good enough is good enough, and then I would go back and I would think about that verse, whatever you do, do it as you're working for the Lord and not for men. And I cannot tell you how many times I was just exasperated thinking, I can't turn it in like this. And so I'd have to go and get that piece of information and take care of it. But that really served me well through the years, because by doing that, I never turned anything intentionally that was incomplete. Now, there were times where I just messed up on something and somebody brought it to my attention, but it was much fewer and farther between when I had the attitude of, I want to do this right. Matter of fact, when I was appraising houses, the last number of years I worked, I don't think I ever did an appraisal without going to God in prayer and asking for His help that I would do it in such a way that both sides would be well served, that nobody would be cheated one way or another. And I'm convinced that God answers our prayers. I think that's the reason that we ask God in prayer. But I also think it motivates us to do our best. And so whatever you do, work at it with all your heart as working for the Lord, not for men, is a standard that is God's bare minimum standard. But when you think about it, it's a standard of excellence for men, because we're doing our best. And then he says this: since you know you'll receive an inheritance from the Lord as a reward. Let me ask you this. Do you know you're going to receive an inheritance from the Lord as a reward? Do you know that you have heaven waiting for you? I'm not saying, do you think you deserve it? I'm just asking, do you know that you have heaven waiting for you? Because even though you have lived a life and have had sin in your life like everybody else has, that you've come back to God on His terms. And because of that, you have confidence that God will give you what He's promised to give you, this inheritance. There is a high standard. Work at it with all your heart. That's tough. That's brutal sometimes. It's grueling sometimes. But when you think about what we're doing, we're going to heaven, it makes it a lot more enjoyable, does it not? When I played sports that I liked, my favorite part of the sport was practice. Because instead of going out and playing for a few minutes and somebody blowing a whistle or ending an inning, you got to play for hours on end without anybody interrupting you. And if it was something I liked doing, that was a lot of fun. When it comes to Christianity, we have a service for God, but it's pushing forward to heaven. It should be something that we truly enjoy, that we have an eager desire for. And if we'll do that, I guarantee you it changes our life. And again, y'all know that because you've experienced that. It's something that we have to believe, though. You know, he says, since you know, you'll receive an inheritance from the Lord as a reward. It is the Lord Christ you're serving. It just changes our perspective, because then instead of being mad at a client, being mad at a child, being mad at a parent, being mad at an authority, being mad at somebody that's under your authority, you're serving Christ. And it's awfully hard to get mad at Christ, at least if you're a decent person. And so when we have that attitude, it just changes the way that we approach things, and it allows us to work at it with all of our heart. In 2 Timothy chapter 2, verse 15, I use this passage a lot because I think it's one of the most important for our service before God. It says, do your best to present yourself to God as one approved, a workman who does not need to be ashamed and who correctly handles the word of truth. When I finally realized the full impact of that statement, or when it made the full impact upon me, it really gave me a lot of hope, because the command is to correctly handle the word of truth. And since God has never commanded anything that's impossible for us, that means we can correctly handle the word of truth. And that's exciting to me. That's why we can know we have an inheritance, because we can correctly handle the word of truth because He commanded us to do it. And so at the very beginning, when He says, do your best to present yourself to God as one approved, that again is the standard. He makes it really simple to understand. You need to do this and this and this. But then he says you need to do it with all your heart. Easy to say, but hard to do. But oh, the reward is just incredible. I was running out of time, so I'm not going to go there. But I am going to go to Jeremiah chapter 29. If you have your Bibles, let's turn over to Jeremiah chapter 29. One of the most critical things about doing our best to correctly handle the word of truth is the aspect that we're seeking God by doing this. In Jeremiah chapter 29 and verse 10, Jeremiah is talking to the people from the perspective of Jerusalem is fallen. He's telling them that when Jerusalem falls, you're going to be in captivity for so many years, but there's going to come a point when you can come back. And so even though the news is bad, the news is also ultimately very good. This is what the Lord says. When 70 years are completed for Babylon, I will come to you and fulfill my gracious promise to bring you back to this place. For I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord, plans to prosper you and not to harm you, plans to give you hope and a future. Do you realize that when we understand that God has plans for us to prosper us, plans to give us hope, not plans to harm us, but plans to bless us, and we really buy in to this promise, it really makes our lives different, because now we have this joy in the service. It couldn't have been fun to have been captives in Babylon. It could not have been fun to have been uprooted from your homeland and taken to a strange place. There were a lot of challenges that they had once they went to Babylon. If you ever want to know about some of them, read the book of Daniel. And you see there's a lot of things that they had to go through when they went there. And yet God expected them to remain faithful, regardless of the difficulty. But then he had that promise, and he revealed this to him. I know the plans I have for you. Have you ever done that when your kids are small? You have something exciting waiting for them. But you also know they can't possibly understand. and yet you encourage them. If you'll do this, it's going to be good. What's coming up is going to be good. And even though they may not be able to grasp it, they trust you. And because they trust you, they get excited about it. The most enjoyable part of the vacations we took when our kids were little was the anticipation of it. You know, 30 more days and we're going to be here. 20 more days and we're going to be here. 10 more days and we're going to be here. And we would start talking about it, and they would get really fired up for it, especially if we were going to the basketball tournament, because there was a lot of fun there. And so we would talk about that. But this idea that God is giving to us is so important. I know the plans I have for you. Yeah, Babylon's going to be hard, and it needs to be hard because it's a punishment for centuries of misconduct. But God tells them, you be faithful because I have plans for you, plans to prosper you, or he indicates to them, be faithful, plans to prosper you and not to harm you, plans to give you a hope and a future. When people have hope and a future, it just changes everything. You may be having difficult times now, but you have hope. It's kind of like when we lose a loved one. It's difficult for a period of time, but if they were faithful and we're faithful, oh, what kind of reunion will that be? I don't know about you. The older I get, the more I look forward to this reunion. There's a future for us, and that future will be the beginning. A lot of people, they get older in their physical life, and they think it's nearly over, and God's got to be looking at us thinking, oh, the plans I have for you. Heaven is eternal. I can only imagine what he has planned for us. But then he says this in verse 12, then you will call on me and pray to me, and I will listen to you. Isn't that comforting? You will seek me and find me when you seek me with all your heart. This is the answer to the question in Matthew chapter 7 when Jesus says, seek and you'll find. But then in Matthew chapter 7 and verse 14, he points out that not many find. It's because when people seek, they don't seek him with all their heart. They're half-hearted or just kind of trying. God says, you will seek me and find me when you seek me with all your heart. I will be found by you, declares the Lord, and will bring you back from captivity. I will gather you from all the nations and places where I have banished you, declares the Lord, and will bring you back to the place from which I carried you into exile. This life is very much an exile, is it not? It's the closest thing to hell for those who are going to heaven, and it's the closest thing to heaven for those who are going to hell. It can be difficult at times. But if we will serve God with all of our heart and look forward with hope to what he's promised us, to this inheritance that he's promised to us, it's going to help us not only to survive the difficult times, but it's also going to allow us to kind of thrive during those difficult times. And sometimes you'll even savor it. And you know what I mean if you've ever gone through something very difficult that you may have whined about all the way through, but you saw it through, and when you saw it through, there was a reward on the other side, and then you can look back on it with satisfaction. There's some hard things in life, but there's heaven waiting for us, for those who will trust in God. He knows the plans he has for us. The question is, will we accept his terms? Invitation's open tonight. Maybe you're ready to become a Christian or need the prayers of the congregation, but if we can help you in any way, won't you come forward and let us know while we stand and sing.